I want to talk about the way God has of pushing people down the downward spiral of spirituality, if that is the way they really want to go. Galatians 1 verse 8, Paul talks about the possibility of an angel from heaven preaching a wrong gospel to the Galatians. And all the angels are good. There are no rebel angels. You can have a look in my book, Bible Basics, if that's a new idea to you. But all the angels of God are good. And yet he says that an angel from heaven, that is a good angel, could possibly teach a wrong gospel to a person. And Ezekiel 14, if the prophet is deceived when he speaks a word, I, Yahweh, have deceived that prophet, and I will destroy him. So God can deceive prophets. Let's give that its due weight. That's why Jeremiah in Jeremiah 20 says, O Lord, you've deceived me, and I was deceived. He clearly recognizes that it was possible to be deceived, and he felt that that's what had happened to him. So, there's a number of these hints here and there in the scriptures. 1 Thessalonians 2, God will send them a spirit of delusion so that they might believe a lie and not the truth, because they didn't love the truth. Deuteronomy 13, don't believe prophets whose prophecies come true, although they teach false teaching, because they've been raised up by God to test your obedience. Isaiah 66, God says, I will choose your delusions, talking to Judah, by making their idols appear to answer them. And then you come to what to me is the clearest example of this in 1 Kings chapter 22, where we have a pretty unique window onto the throne room in heaven, the court of heaven, where Micaiah sees a vision which explains the background in heaven to the fact that the prophets of Ahab are telling him to go out to battle when that is not, in fact, what was the wise thing to do. In fact, it was God's intention that Ahab would die at Ramoth-Gilead, and so he made Ahab's prophets lie to him. So he says, I saw Yahweh sitting on his throne, and all the army of heaven, this is the Lord of hosts of angels, these are the angels, standing by him on his right hand and on his left. And Yahweh said, who will entice Ahab to go and fall at Ramoth-Gilead? One said one thing, another said another. And then a spirit came out and stood before Yahweh and said, I'll entice him. Now God makes his angels spirits, so these spirits are angels. And Yahweh said, how? He said, I'll go out and be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And God said, you'll entice him, and you will do this, so go out and do so. So behold, Yahweh has put a lying spirit in the mouth of all these your prophets. So God is willing then to deceive people. And that gives another angle on the Lord's Prayer. Lead us not into temptation. Well, if God can't and won't lead you into the time of testing, there would be no need to pray that. So the angels then were divided in this vision on God's right hand and on his left hand. Perhaps you might think the ones on his left hand were the angels who were sort of specifically tasked with bringing evil. Psalm 78:49 talks about angels of evil, not evil angels, but angels who perform disaster in that sense. We think of the angel called the destroyer at Passover time, all clearly under God's control. As I say, there is no radical evil in this world, in the cosmos. There is no evil that is out of God's control. God is all-powerful. There is no room left thereby for the popular idea of Satan, demons, disobedient angels flying around the place, getting up to mischief. All this is the stuff of paganism. This is not taught in the Bible. And have a look at my book, The Real Devil, if this is sort of news to you. But my point at this time is to focus upon the fact that God, from all these passages we've looked at, is prepared to confirm people in the wrong way in which they seek to go. Balaam would be an example. Clearly, God did not want Balaam to go with Balak's messengers and to curse Israel. Balaam clearly wanted to go, and so God pushes him along the road, and then the angel stands before him and blocks his path, and the donkey falls down underneath Balaam, and he realizes he has been pushing against God and the angel trying to block his way, and he says, well, if it displeases you, I'll go back home. And the angel says, no, go on, go with the messengers of Balak, but only speak the word that I tell you. So it was as if the angel was sort of mad with him for doing what he was now telling him to do. It's an example as in line with all the passages we've just looked at, where God will confirm people in the wrong way in which they seek to go. I think that is more to be feared than anything, more to be feared than cancer, road accidents, whatever. To fall into the hands of the living God, that is a fearful thing. When a person has gone so repeatedly and consistently against God that he pushes you further down that path. Now, all these passages are evidence that demand a verdict, and I think they are all saying the same thing, that God will confirm people in their misunderstandings, and he will confirm them in their wickedness, if that is the way in which you want to go. And that explains, I think, why there is at times a sense of sort of evil that appears to be greater than the sum of individual sinners. It is not because there is radical evil out there in the cosmos. It is not because there is any personal Satan being. I think the idea is that God will push people down the path that they wish to go. Now, if I finish there, that would just be a bit negative. It would be a great warning, and it is a great warning. But this feature of God's workings that I've just chatted about is what happened to King Saul. And we're told there that an evil spirit from the Lord, and I emphasize that, from the Lord, came upon him. And yet also in the life of Saul, God gave him another heart and confirmed him if he wished to go in the way of the Spirit. We've looked at, if you like, the evil spirit from the Lord, how God will confirm you over and above your own volition in the way in which you wish to go. If you wish to disobey him, if you wish to run to shed blood, if you wish to run to after the rewards of divination, as Balaam did. But more positively, there is the Holy Spirit. This is the opposite, where God will confirm you in the way in which you want to go. And that's one reason I encourage people to get baptized in water, because then we are given this priceless gift of the Holy Spirit, not speaking in tongues, rabbits out of hats, raising the dead and all that. That was in the first century. That's not now. But the gift is that which we really need, which we long for, which any spiritually minded, humble person longs for. That is the strength to be like Jesus, the strength to be conformed to his death and resurrection, as Paul puts it. The Spirit of Christ, the Spirit which can make you as Christ. It is that power over and above ourselves which we so desperately need. And it is exactly that which God promises. Now, for some backgrounds, folks from some backgrounds, this is all a little bit scary. Is it not all about doing it all in my own strength, about understanding the Bible correctly, and then, well, in terms of spirituality and being like Jesus, well, yeah, we'll try our best. But you see, it is that aspect of life, of being like Jesus, that is Christianity. That is the essence. And it's that which we, unaided, just with our own intellectual strength, find so difficult. And it is there, in that point of ultimate need, that God is willing to give us his Spirit. We've seen from all these negative examples how God is able to work directly on the human heart, and he can also do that positively, and that is what he is willing and eager to do if we ask him to do that. And I urge you to ask him to do that and to open yourself up to the influence of the Spirit of God and the Spirit of Jesus, which will confirm you in every decision you make that is for him and not against him.